Thank you very much for the invitation. It's been a very interesting conference. In the past couple of days, we've heard a lot about geometry, not so much physics. So this will be primarily a physicist talk. Although I realize that we have a very much mixed audience today, so I'll give a pretty extended introduction and at the risk of boring all the physicists in the first half of the talk. So in the last couple of days, we've heard a lot about ideas like Ricci flows and Clavial manifolds, Lagrangian manifolds of Foucault category, and Seibert-Wittgen theory, Waffle-Wittgen equations. All of these ideas arise in physics, by physics I mean string theory, in very natural ways. If you've been paying attention to the string theory literature in the past 14 years, you may notice that half the papers have to do with something called the ABS-DFT correspondence. And as you may also notice, that all the three physics talks today have to do with the ABS-DFT correspondence. And I think, though this thing has generated tremendous excitement in the physics community, it has not received as much attention by mathematicians, and that's what I like to draw your attention to today. So normally, when people talk about ABS-DFT correspondence, one starts with the most studied example of ABS-DFT, which on the bulk and in the series space side involves type 2D string theory, and on the CFT side, you have the famous four-dimensional n equals 4 supersymmetric Yamil's theory. I will not discuss that today. I will discuss what I consider to be the simplest non-trivial version of the ABS-DFT correspondence, which on the CFT side involves something I call vector models. I'll explain what they are later. And these things are much simpler CFTs than the n equals 4 supernormal theory, which we'll, Pedro will discuss in the next talk. Now, the little bit price that one has to pay in order to talk about this version of ABS-DFT correspondence is that on the bulk side, you don't have something that reduced to the ordinary Einstein gravity in any limit. Normally, in n equals 4 supernormals, you have the CFT dual to a string theory, which in some particular limit reduces to Einstein gravity together with some other fields. This does not happen in this case. The price you have to pay is that you have to extend Einstein gravity to something that is called higher spin gravity, or higher spin gauge theory, and I'll explain that later. I must apologize to the mathematicians that there will be, I will not proceed by writing down definitions, lemmas, and theorems, since I'm a physicist, but I hope you'll excuse me for that. Those are the things that the mathematicians would want to formulate. Let me start by explaining I want to explain some background of the ABS-DFT correspondence, which will at least allow me to formulate the mathematical statements, or even just vaguely. So this correspondence is, on the ABS side, we have a quantum theory of gravity. I'll explain a little bit what I mean by that in D plus one dimensional anti-de-Sitter space. And on the other side of the correspondence, we have a conformal field theory, in D dimensions. D is a non-negative and a positive integer. I shouldn't use this word. Now, what is the theory of gravity? With a classical theory of gravity, one starts with, so on the gravity side, I'm going to be talking about D plus one dimensions. D could be essentially two or three in this talk. What is the theory of gravity? Classically, a theory of gravity, to describe a theory of gravity, one starts with some C plus one dimensional manifold. And with a pseudo Riemannian metric, G, sometimes we'll talk about the Euclidean version of it, in which case G will be taken to be a Riemannian manifold. This, in the context of gravity, this metric is not arbitrary, but it should obey, in classical context of classical gravity, the metric G should obey the Einstein equation, possibly coupled to additional fields. The Einstein's equation can be equivalently stated as the extremization of the Einstein-Hilbert functional that is of the form 1 over 60 pi Newton's constant integral the volume form, which I write in this way, multiplied by the Ricci scalar minus 2 times the cosmological constant, which will be taken to be negative for discussing gravity in entity-specific space. So lambda would be minus 1 over L squared, where L is a length scale that will be identified with. Theory admits a negative constant curvature solution, which is anti de Sitter space, and L will be the curvature radius of the anti de Sitter space. Now, one can add to this some matter fields, which could be minimally coupled to the gravity, which is described in terms of this metric. But one could also add terms involving powers of the Riemann tensor and its covariant derivatives contracted in various ways. These I will refer to as higher derivative corrections to the Einstein-Hilbert functional or to Einstein-Hilbert to Einstein's equations. And that will be, in fact, crucial for this version of ABS-CFT involving the vector models I'll be talking about. So let me emphasize that the gravity theory I'll be talking about will not be described just by this action, but will have all the higher derivative corrections. I'll explain later, in principle, how these higher derivative corrections can be obtained. What is the theory of quantum gravity? Formally, what one does is to consider, so the quantum version of the story would involve taking e to the minus the action functional, which depends on the metric, and possibly some other fields, which I denote collectively by phi, and perform the functional integration over the metric of all metrics on this manifold. This formal gadget has also the integration over other fields and so on. This formal gadget has a lot of problems. It suffers from many problems, which I will not have time to explain in this talk. Suffice to say that the only case where we really understand or know for sure that some version of this path integral over the metric is well defined requires you to impose certain boundary conditions on the metric. So we'll take M to be a open manifold. In fact, it's going to be taken to be asymptotically anti de Sitter space. I could start considering anti de Sitter space. D plus one dimensional anti de Sitter space, I'll allow the metric to fluctuate somewhere in the middle of the space, but asymptotically at infinity, I'll fix the metric to asymptotically approach that of the anti de Sitter space metric. And it turns out that this will enable enable you to have at least have a chance for this path integral to be well defined. To fully make sense of the theory of quantum gravity, one has to really complete this Einstein-Hilbert functional in some very complicated way, and that's where normally string theory comes in. I will discuss an alternative extension of Einstein-Hilbert theory, which is a lot simpler, in fact, than string theory, and has a chance to be a complete quantum theory by itself, it seems. Formally, what you have to do is to consider the functional integration over the metric such that, so this this manifold M has some boundary. This really, for this anti-Dirichlet space, the metric is such that the boundary is at infinity. It doesn't really have a boundary in an ordinary sense. It has a conformal boundary. So schematically, this one needs to require that the metric at a boundary is given by some fixed metric G naught, and this equal sign has the quotation mark because it's not strictly true. What one requires is that so going towards the boundary of this manifold, there's a symmetric line element looks like d rho squared plus e to the 2 rho of some ds naught squared, where this is the metric g, and this is the metric on the boundary g naught, as rho is some radial coordinate that goes to infinity, and this is what I mean by the metric at the boundary is fixed to be g naught. This is still quite rough, but at least give you some idea of what this is. And in fact, if you take just this metric and take the ds naught to be flat, this is a ADS and Dirichlet space in a particular coordinate system. So normally one would like to so if we take G naught to be the flat metric, say on a d-dimensional Euclidean space or the or Minkowskian space, then we have either the Euclidean or Lorentzian anti-Dirichlet space with a metric that's just flat. So d rho squared plus e to the 2 rho dx mu, which is conventional to write in terms of a different coordinate z, which is just exponential of minus rho, and the boundary, the conformal boundary, is at z going to 0. Now, more generally, on the bulk side of ADS safety correspondence, one works with more than just the metric. In fact, that is necessary for the ADS safety to work. One has to consider, in fact, generally infinitely many fields in the bulk. Really, all of these fields come from string theory in the example of n equals 4 supernumeraries, in the dual of n equals 4 supernumeraries. So for each field, which could be the metric fluctuation or some other matter fields coupled to the metric in the bulk, there's one can impose a boundary condition. Phi naught assign a boundary condition, so phi naught could be a boundary value for this bulk field, and write down a functional that is usually referred to as a partition function with some particular prescribed boundary condition phi naught. This is formally defined via the path integral, where you impose, you have the action, which depends on the bulk field phi, and one impose a particular, assigns a boundary condition for the field phi, such that as a function of so x and z being the radial direction, taking z to 0 means going toward the boundary of the space, the field goes like scales like z to some power delta times phi naught of x as z going to 0. Delta is a number, it's a real number that's going to be determined by the mass of this field in the bulk. For example, here you have the power of z here, but never mind that detail, this up to some scaling, we impose the boundary condition like this, and that is the partition function with the prescribed boundary condition for this bulk theory. And that's the object of central interest in ADS safety correspondence. This is needed to formulate this correspondence. The statement of ADS safety is the assertion that ADS-50 is the assertion, the following assertion, that this partition function as a function of phi naught is related to, can be expressed as a correction function in the conformal field theory. That's the form e to the integral in d dimension. This is on the boundary, which could be Rd or R1, comma d minus 1, phi naught of x, O of x in some d dimensional conformal field theory, where O, for each bulk field phi, it corresponds to a dual operator O in the conformal field theory. There are various ways to formulate a conformal field theory. I mean, it's a quantum field theory, and one can try to formulate the conformal field theory using some Lagrangian, but no, the right-hand side is also defined by, could be defined by a path integral. Here, I have not, I've written down this expression, which just means O is the operator of the CFT, so if you think of this as expanding this in the power series, and at each time you have some you have integration of the product of a bunch of operators inserted at different positions, integrated over space. And that correlator, this is the expression value of that correlator, and that expression value is computed by a path integral in the conformal field theory. I have not specified yet what the conformal field theory is. So a conformal field theory, even though it could in principle be defined by a path integral, very often the conformal field theory we're dealing with here could be, say, strongly coupled, in which case the path integral formulation is not very useful. Nonetheless, we can describe the theory in terms of its operator spectrum and its correlation functions. In fact, a conformal field theory is, the data of the conformal field theory is completely determined by the spectrum of operators. These operators transform under conformal transformation on RD in some particular way, and their correlation functions transform covariantly under conformal transformation. That data completely specifies the conformal field theory. If you, one is given a conformal field theory such as n equals 4 super Jan Mills, one of the sort of tremendously challenging physics physical problem is to calculate the spectrum of operators and their correlation functions, as will be discussed in the next talk. Now, of course, one can, given this, one can also relate the functional variation of this partition function with respect to phi naught at various points and relate this to the correlation functions of this operator O at of a set of n operators O inserted at various positions. And these are the important data of the conformal field theory. Let me now be a little bit more concrete and at least specify an example of this bulk field phi, which is going to be the graviton field, or in other words, by which I mean, I simply mean the metric fluctuation. So one can write the metric, the component of the metric tensor, g mu nu. So generally, we're performing path integration over all metrics. One can expand it around the ADS metric, which is a solution of the classical equation of motion, in this case, plus some quantum fluctuation, which I call h mu nu. And this h mu nu would be one of the bulk fields that I'm talking about here. And this h mu nu is dual to the to an operator t mu nu in the conformal field theory, that is the stress energy tensor. And one can expand the bulk action, not to be confused with some action from the boundary theory, has nothing to do with that a priori, the bulk action, the function of the metric together with other fields, can be expanded in the form G ADS plus, say, some quadratic part in H plus a cubic part in H, and so on and so forth. And then one can work in, at least in perturbation theory, for instance. So if you're given some boundary source, so I'm thinking of this phi naught as some boundary source, some boundary condition, j mu nu for its minimum of x, then at the quadratic level, ignoring the higher derivative term, higher order terms, higher order coupling of H, essentially we have a free field theory of H mu nu in the bulk. And if one solves the equation of motion for H mu in the bulk, the solution with the prescribed boundary behavior, this boundary behavior that H mu nu goes to Z to some power times J mu nu, the solution is of the form H mu nu is the J mu nu integrated with some kernel. So dy k mu nu rho sigma x z y j rho sigma of y. It takes this form where k here is really called the boundary to bulk propagator. Never mind what it is. So at linearized order, one can write on h of this form. And so in practice, what one can do in actually calculating the left-hand side of this formula of that assertion is working to first order in perturbation theory, which is amounts to working classically in the bulk. In the bulk theory, one could take, for example, the functional variation of the action with respect to J, mu nu at one point, and back to J rho sigma at another point. And the result of that is going to be a two-point function for the stress energy tensor. This is something that can be calculated very concretely, and there's some non-trivial results. I will not write down the explicit expression. Suffice to say here that this guy is completely fixed by the structure of this correction function up to the overall normalization. It's completely fixed by conformal symmetry. I will not write that on the board. One can proceed and consider the three-point function. At two leading order in the bulk, what you have is some of the cubic variation of the cubic part of the bulk action with respect to three J's, and one obtains something like the three-point function of the stress energy tensor of the dual theory. So this is x1, x2, x3. This is only to leading order in the bulk. In the bulk theory, I have not written very explicitly here, but we're really doing a perturbative expansion in the Newton's constant, which is one of the Newton's constant multiplies the overall action. Generally, this can be summarized in terms, this kind of perturbative expansion can be summarized in terms of the Witten diagram, which is the end of the Sears space version of Feynman diagram that Girard will explain in some more detail later on in the third talk later on today. But if you compute the three-point function of the stress energy tensor of the boundary conformal field theory, for instance, it can be calculated through diagrams like this, plus various loop corrections and diagram like this. Let me explain this notation a little bit. This diagram, this disk represents the end of the Sears space. This boundary of the disk represents the boundary schematically. Each of these wiggly lines stands for the propagator. And then you sew these propagators together using the cubic interaction, which is come from the cubic part of the action in this case. There could also be quartic and higher order terms in the action that contributes. And then there are loop corrections where you have you can take all kinds of diagrams involving these propagators. But in the limit, when the Newton constant is small, the leading order contribution to the three-point function of the stress energy tensor would just come from this tree-level diagram, which is simply that. And you can also consider a four-point function, which would involve diagrams like this. And if there's a quartic vertex, thing like this, plus loop corrections, and so on and so forth. These things you can, in principle, calculate in a straightforward way. For example, if you take Einstein's Hilbert action functional and plug in and calculate this first diagram for the stress energy, for the three-point function of the stress energy tensor, and ask what that is. Yes. That's correct. Correct. The G is being integrated over. So I integrate over the all metrics in the bulk, but there's still some dependence on. So in order to do this integration, to make this function integration well defined, one has to impose a boundary condition on this G, which is introduced through this source here. But the bulk measure has been integrated over. To do that integration in exactly is a tremendously difficult thing, but one can formulate this computation perturbatively, and this is essentially what it means to compute it perturbatively. I've given the simplest example of that. Generally, you want to compute using the Witten diagrams. Okay, so now suppose you consider, take simply the Einstein-Hilbert action, and plug in and try to calculate this correlation functions and ask what you get out of it. So, for instance, you could take Einstein gravity. So take the example of Einstein gravity. The terminology Einstein gravity I usually use to refer to simply the Einstein-Hilbert action, which is this one. And generally, I could consider higher derivative corrections to that, as I mentioned earlier. So if you take this, expand in the metric fluctuation, calculate, it's a non-trivial calculation, but that can be done, and calculate this diagram, you'll obtain some sort of three-point function of the stress energy tensor that is supposed to be the leading order answer in the limit of small Newton constants of the three-point function of the stress energy tensor of a dual conformal field theory. Now, is this actually realized by some actual conformal field theory that we know of? The answer is yes, but not all conformal field theory we know of have this particular form of the three-point function of the stress energy tensor. More generally, a conformal field theory is due to something on the bulk side that involves higher derivative corrections to Einstein gravity. So you can have things like, you can add things like, for example, A1 R squared, A2 R mu nu, A3 R mu nu rho sigma, and all kinds of terms, R cubed, and even with the derivatives, covariant derivatives on R and contracting various ways. So a general conformal field theory will be due to a complicated theory in the bulk that just in the gravity sector alone would involve all sorts of higher derivative corrections. Now, that seems to be quite out of reach. Well, let's consider some explicit example of a conformal field theory. Let's start with the simplest one. The simplest conformal field theory in D-dimensions that one can think of is a free field theory of a single massless scalar field. That's really as simple as you can get. So simplest D-dimensional conformal field theory. It's a field theory of a single massless scalar field in D dimension, which I call phi of x. Not to be confused with this curly phi rolled in the bulk. This is supposed to be a field that lives on the boundary in D dimensions. It's supposed to be D plus one dimensions. So it can be described in terms of a Lagrangian, which is del mu phi. You can formulate the path integral and calculate its correlation functions. The result is very simple. The correlation functions between the two phi at position x and y is just given by the green function, which is 1 over optimization, 1 over x minus y to the 2 delta. The delta is the scaling dimension of the field phi, which in for the free theory in d dimensions just d minus 2 over 2. So that's very simple. Generally, you can make operators. So we've been talking about operators in the conformal field theory. So you can consider, so all the operators of this conformal field theory, to be precise, local operators in this conformal field theory, are made out of just all possible products of phi and their derivative. So for example, the operators could be of the form phi cubed del mu phi del mu del nu phi, something like this. This will be an example of a local operator. It all depends on some position x. Then one can calculate the correction functions of these operators by the rule of weak contraction. Using the free propagator. So this is quite simple, and we can straightforwardly calculate all the correlators. This CFT, though simple, is not very appropriate for ABS-CFT correspondence for the reason that there is no expansion parameter in some sense. In the bulk theory, we want to do perturbation theory since the full non-perturbative exact gravity path integral is too hard. And in order to do perturbation theory, we're really expressing all the correction functions as a perturbative expansion in the Newton's constant. Nothing here plays the role of Newton's constant. So you have to do something a little different. And what you can do is, in fact, something very simple. So a better simple conformal field theory is instead of considering just one single massless scalar field, you consider a set of n. So the better thing to consider is a set of n free massless scalars, phi I, where I runs from 1 to n, and subject to the restriction that you'll be considering operators that are O-N invariant, so restricted to the O-N singlet sector. So by this, I simply mean that I will only be considering operators that are made out of like this product of phi's with derivatives, but such that they are invariant under the O-N rotation on this N field. Now, why is that? Why does that help us? For example, you can consider operator like phi I, so with sum over I. So that's invariant under the O-N rotation. So if you normalize the two-point function, if you calculate the two-point function, because of the weak contractions of the N fields, it will scale like N. If you want to normalize this operator by normalizing the two-point function so that it doesn't scale with N, one would like to stick in a factor, normalization factor 1 over square root N, so that the two-point function scales like 1 as you take N to be large. But if you calculate the three-point function, which is simply computed by the weak contraction, so you have have phi I at some position x1, x2, x3, phi at x1, phi j at x2, and phi k at x3. You can just consider all possible contractions like this, and replace each contraction by the two-point function of phi. That would compute the three-point function in the free field theory. So this thing can be easily calculated, but because of the factor 1 over square root n from each operator and the factor of n coming from sum over this entire index, sum over this, so here the I is identified with k and k is identified with j and so on, summing over this this index around the loop, you get a factor of n. So this scales like 1 over square root of n. And this 1 over square root n, this very simple factor 1 over square root n, should be identified with the cubic coupling constant g in the bulk. So if you imagine this conformal field theory is dual to some bulk theory, then this leading 1 over n answer should be identified with a contribution from this Witten diagram in the bulk. And so the bulk coupling constant g is identified with 1 over square root n. What we mean by the perturbation expansion in the coupling constant in the bulk, g essentially square root of the Newton's constant, what we mean is on the boundary side is the 1 over n expansion. And this also explains why this one single free scalar is more complicated in this context because that corresponds to the case where the coupling constant is of order 1, and you cannot do perturbation theory. Okay, so this all sounds very simple, and you can ask then, is there a bulk theory that actually realizes, well, such that the dual component field theory is this very simple theory of n free massless scalars? Well, you can try to proceed and consider the stress energy tensor of this theory. So to consider the stress energy tensor T mu nu of X, which is of the form del nu phi plus other terms involving two derivatives on phi, its optimization is uniquely specified if you require it to be a symmetric tensor that's traceless and conserved, so that del mu T mu nu is zero. Now one can calculate the three-point function of this stress energy tensor once again through weak contraction very straightforwardly in this theory of n free massless scalars. This is sum over I, let's say. You just get some tensor that depends on x1, x2, x3, and all the indices mu, mu, rho, sigma, alpha, beta, and ask, does this agree with what one gets by computing this Witten diagram, say, using the Einstein-Hilbert action functional in the bulk? So, does this agree? Does it agree with Einstein-Hilbert action? And you can calculate this Witten diagram. And the answer is no. Otherwise, life will be too simple. This means is that if this thing has a dual bulk theory, which indeed it's been conjectured that there is a dual bulk theory, the gravity sector of the bulk theory cannot be simply the Einstein-Hilbert action, but must have higher derivative terms. So if you want the CFT side to be simple, you have to pay some price in the bulk, and the bulk theory is going to be a little more complicated than just Einstein gravity. But though complicated, it's actually manageable, and I'll sort of describe that in the rest of this talk. So here I've been talking about general D dimensions. The best understood example of the bulk theory that could be due to, in this case, simply the free massless scalar theory is best understood in the case when D is 3. So the ADS space has 4 dimensions, the CFT is, we're talking about a 3-dimensional free scalar, so this is best understood in this. This free theory here is an example of what I call a vector model. I simply refer to the fact that there's some ON, or restricting to some operators that invariant under some ON or UN, the field phi I transform in a vector representation of ON or UN, as opposed to the adjoint, like in gauge theory with some, like in A4 super Yamil's theory. This was the conjecture made in around 2002 by Sedgin, Sandel, and by Klebanov, Polyakov. The claim or the conjecture is that a particular higher spin gauge theory, which I'll describe in a moment, higher spin gauge theory, formulated by Vasiliev, this is a theory that lives in ADS4, is due to this ON vector model, the theory I was talking about there, and as well as the something else, which is called the critical ON vector model, which I may or may not have time to discuss toward the end of the talk, in 3 dimensions. A little bit on the history of this. The higher spin gauge theory is the old subject, though perhaps somewhat obscure. The first kind of hint that one can write down a consistent nonlinear interacting higher spin, just classical higher spin gauge theory in anti-Dessert space, was found by Fradkin and Vasilev in the early 80s. In the 90s, after many years of work, Vasilev was able to finally construct a complete classical nonlinear theory of interacting higher spin gauge fields in ADS space. That was before ADS-CFT was discovered, in fact. And when Vasilev came up with these higher spin gauge theories, it remained obscure in the physics community, largely because people didn't really know what to do with it. It seems to be quite disconnected from other areas of physics. However, it was realized a few years after ADS-CFT, the discovery of ADS-CFT, by these people, that in fact the Vasilev theory could be due to some very simple class of conformal field theories. In the same way how the type 2B string theory in ADS 5 times S 5 is due to n equals 4 super Yamils. Though when this conjecture was first proposed, it was really somewhat precisely formulated by Klebanov and Polyakov. For a while, people didn't really know what to do with it, even though the CFT side is so simple. The bulk theory was somewhat complicated, and even how to go about and do the perturbative calculation is not completely clear. And there's been kind of lore among string theorists that perhaps this conjecture is not very precise or probably too wild and may not hold exactly. But now we seem to have gathered enough evidence to indicate that this conjecture should hold exactly, at least perturbatively on both sides, perturbatively in 1 over n on the right-hand side and perturbatively in the coupling constant on the left-hand side. In the last couple of years, with Simone Giambi, who was a postdoc at Harvard at the time and now a postdoc at Perimeter Institute, we made an attempt to understand how to calculate quirky functions using the Vasilev theory, and we're able to match some of the quirky functions exactly with the free OAN vector model, which was really the first non-trivial check of this correspondence at the interacting level. I will not actually be able to discuss any of the technical details of what we did. Instead, so far I haven't even get to tell you what the Vasilev theory is, so I'll at least try to do that and indicate what is it that in principle one has to do to check and even prove this conjecture, at least perturbatively. So I need to tell you what the Vasilev system is. I should point out that the Vasilev system of higher spin gauge fields is quite peculiar in that, so first of all, this is a gauge theory that involves infinitely many fields. In fact, it involves one field of each non-negative even integer spin S. So by the spin, roughly, I simply mean that for spin 0, we have a scalar field in the bulk. For the spin 2 case, we have a field, a gauge field, that is a symmetric rank 2, roughly speaking, a symmetric trace extensor. To be precise, in fact, to formulate this in the gauge in a random way, one needs to take a symmetric double trace extensor, but never mind that subtlety for now. This will be identified with the metric fluctuation h mu nu that we've been talking about. But there are also spin 4 gauge fields and spin 6 and so on and so forth. And while this h mu nu is due to the stress energy tensor, this scalar is due to this very simple scalar operator phi I of the boundary theory, one can write down one can write down conserved currents of higher spin. By higher spin, I simply mean that it's a symmetric trace tensor with more indices under spatial rotation. One can write down conserved even spin, higher spin currents in the in this case, the free massive scalar theory, and those are supposed to be dual to these higher spin gauge fields in the bulk. The challenge is to write down the interactions of these higher spin fields in a gauge invariant manner. And that was for a long time an open problem, which was solved by the Vasilev, by Vasilev in the 90s. It can be formulated in the following way. I must say that this formalism I'll describe is actually quite concise, but tremendously obscure. And it takes a lot of work to just even explain why the thing I'm about to write down is a higher spin gauge theory. But in fact, I will not even be able to do that today. But at least I'll show you in principle, now that you see in principle what it is. So M is going to be a four manifold here. That's going to be the ADS space. It's going to be identified with this ADS 4. One needs to, in order to formulate the Vasilev system, one needs to introduce some auxiliary vector space, say V, I call V Y and V of Z. These are two-dimensional complex vector spaces. We'll put a coordinate on these, call them Y alpha, or alpha runs from 1 to 2, the two holomorphic coordinates. It's conventional in physics literature to write the complex conjugate of these as y bar alpha dot. Alpha dot stands emphasizing the fact that the complex conjugate is the anti-holomorphic coordinates. I apologize for this ugly notation. And similarly here you have the z alpha and the z bar alpha dot, the conjugate. And one defines a, so consider functions of y and z. I will denote these collectively as capital Y and this collectively as capital Z. And for functions Y and Z, module sum subtlety, so in fact I'll be talking about formal power, let's say, begin with formal power series in Y and Z, one can define a star product. So this is a star product. That is defined in a way that's a little bit similar to the Moyal product, but not quite the same. So let's say I have only functions that holomorphic functions of y and z, then the star product is defined in the following very simple way: yz e to the epsilon alpha beta, the derivative with back to y alpha on x on the left, derivative with respect to z alpha acting on the left, and derivative on y beta acting on the right, minus derivative of z beta acting on the right, g y z. So in fact, at the level of formal power theories, this is equivalent to a Moyal. It is equivalent to a Moyal product, but it turns out that there's some crucial differences on actual functions, which are of interest in this ADS-CFT correspondence. So it's actually important to work with this particular form. So far, nothing. I have not introduced the fields yet, so I'll introduce them next. The fields in this ADS field theory are contained in what I would call master fields. These are supposed to contain the higher spin field together with many auxiliary fields, which are solved in terms of the higher spin field through the equation of motion, which I'm about to write down. This master field contains A, which is like a connection that I can take it to be a section of some, well, it depends on M and Vy and Vz, and takes value in the cotangent bundle of M, together with the cotangent bundle of Vz, this are understood to be pulled back to this product space. B is something, it's just a function that is real valued. Depends on y and z as well as the ADS coordinates. One needs to introduce something called the Kleinian, which are simply defined to be e to the z alpha y alpha summed over alpha, and similarly there's its conjugate with a definition. This definition of star product that Vasilev introduced, this Kleinian have the property that a star squares to one, and so do the k bar, of course. Oh, by the way, I should have said that for the anti-holomorphic functions, the star product acts in the same way, and the star and the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates y and z do not talk to each other under star product, just ordinary multiplication. One then writes down a connection. So here I'm just going to take sort of the over m times vy times vz. Kind of a, I'm going to take a trivial, well, so one can talk about a connection, right, dA to be the exterior derivative in x plus d in z plus this a. You can think of this as some kind of connection on a trivial bundle over m, whose fiber is the polynomial, the formal power series ring in y and z, or functions of y and z. Anyway, I'm not going to try to give a very precise formulation of this mathematical object, but it's clear from the equation what it is. One can write down a curvature for this connection, dA star dA. And then Vasilev's equation, one needs to further impose some conditions on this field. For example, let's define the object R to be K, K bar. One needs to impose some truncation on the field such that R commutes with, star commutes with B. You can ignore these conditions for now, where anti commutes with S, where W and S are the m and the z m and the z components of the connection. So this a is written as w plus s. So w sits in here and s sits in here. Anyway, I will not have time to explain why you want to impose those conditions. Well, y and z, y kind of participates in the star product with z. So other than that, it just comes along for the ride for now. So it participates in the star product with z, and eventually what you want to do is to do a power series expansion of this master field in y and z, and the various components are related to the higher speed fields, various higher speed fields, and their derivatives through the equation of motion, which I have not written down yet. So far, it's just a bunch of definitions with no dynamics. The Vasilev's equation is somewhat bizarre looking, simple but somewhat bizarre looking. Since f of a is b star k dz squared plus k bar dz bar squared, whereby dz squared just means dz1 wedge dz2, and similarly this dz1 dot bar wedge dz2 dot bar. K and K bar are the Kleinians I introduced there, and B is this this real field. There's no additional constraint on B, so the B itself appearing on the right-hand side, it has to obey the Bianchi identity for this curvature, and that imposed some constraint on B. Other than that, there's no additional constraint apart from these conditions. And that's it. That's the velocity of the equation, which looks deceivingly simple, but the actual physics of it is quite complicated. So this thing also admits there's a gauge symmetry, under which under infinitesimal gauge symmetry, this A transforms by the dA of some gauge parameter epsilon, which is a function of on M times Vy times Vz, and the B transform in some way, that is epsilon star B minus B star, epsilon conjugated by this R. Conjugation by R actually flips the sign of Y and Z, but never mind that detail. To actually get this the theory due to the O(n) vector model, one needs to make a further truncation on the field. Otherwise, it will be actually due to the U(n) version of this. To be due to the O(n) version of this, one needs to make a further truncation to what to the even spins, which is referred to as the minimal bosonic velocity of theory. I will not describe that truncation. So far, it's not actually clear from what I described to you why this is a Heisenberg gauge theory. It's not even clear why it describes a field theory in anti-Dessert space. Since I'm running out of time, I'm just going to say this in words. One can write down, so in order to study this theory, let's say using perturbation theory, one needs to start with a classical solution that is that's maximum amount of maximum amount of symmetry, which you will refer to as the vacuum solution. So one starts with the vacuum solution. The vacuum solution is of the form B is equal to 0 and S is equal to 0. W is some W naught that depends on the X and the Y's and Y bars only. And this W0 encodes, so this W0 will obey the equation of the form dW0 in X plus W0 star W0. This is one form in X equals 0. It obeys this transitive form of the equation. And if you you can write down a particular form of W0 solution for W0 using the explicit form of the spin connection and the frame of ABS4, and will solve this equation. By linearizing this equation around this vacuum solution, what you discover is, in fact, higher speed fields propagating in ABS4. If you then work to next order in perturbation theory, you'll discover interactions of these higher spin fields. Now, this system is kind of tricky in that we do not actually know, even though this equation of motion can be written in a simple way, we do not know a useful way to write the action function of this theory, which is not obvious how to obtain any simple way from given this equation, just because you have infinite set of fields interacting in some nonlinear way. Nonetheless, one can get a little bit around that and calculate the coefficient functions directly using these equations of motion, which is what Simone Giambi and I did. At level of three-point functions, we found that, for instance, the three-point function of the stress energy tensor at tree level in this theory precisely agrees with that of the free scalar theory, which is not true for Einstein gravity. So that indicates that this theory encodes higher derivative correction to Einstein theory that is precisely the correct one to be dual to the free O(n) vector model. I'm just going to mention and say in words what we did in these two other papers which are coming out soon. In this work with Simone Giambi and Shiraz Miwala, Shiroman Prakash, and Sandy Trivedi, we considered a parity violating generalization of this, which is actually a lot richer. In this parity violating generalization, on the left-hand side of the correspondence, we have a more general class of parity violating velocity of theory. So here, this velocity of theory, the structure is very rigid. You can't really perturb it much. But if you require parity symmetry, but if you relax parity, then there's a more general class of velocity of theory we can write down. We conjecture that the particular family of this parity violating velocity of theory is due to not the free O(n) theory, but O(n) the free O(n) theory coupled to O(n) or U(n) Chern-Simons theory, which is much more non-trivial. In this work with my student Qiuming Chang, we consider the ABS3 CFT2 version of it. There has been a recent conjecture very much along the spirit of this Sutsky and Sandel Kleinov-Polyakov conjecture relating the Vasquez Heisenberg gauge theory in three-dimensional anti-Dessert space, which is actually not a pure Heisenberg gauge theory, but is a Heisenberg gauge theory coupled to some massive matter fields in some non-trivial way. The dual CFT is a two-dimensional conformal field theory. In this case, it is a rational conformal field theory known as the WM minimal model. It has a particular coset representation, which I do not have time to describe. And with Qiming Zhang, we actually verified some aspects of that correspondence by comparing the three-point functions. So I will stop here. Thank you.